last week. How many grandparents do we have here?
Great.
All the grandparents stand up.
Great.
Are there any expecting grandparents? Great. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Ah, boy, it's great to be a grandparent. So you have a little reproduction. Now, if you'll turn over in your Bibles in 2 Kings, I want us to look for a while on, I think, some interesting thoughts as we think about preparing and reaching out. We had a good session with the Sunday school workers tonight. This is in line with what we want to do. In the 7th chapter, we'll have most of it. But in the 24th, 5th, 6th verses of the 6th chapter, we see something of the situation. That this was a time when Ben-Hadad, king of Syria, had gathered all of his hosts. Now they had besieged Samaria. They had encamped all the way around. They closed in the city. They closed off the commerce, food, and so forth. And there was a famine within the city of Samaria. And people were dying of starvation. And as you read this, the horrible events that took place, even the practice of cannibalism, was taking place because they were so hungry, eating animals and donkeys' heads and so forth. But outside the gates, there were four men who were lepers. And we come now to see this in the 3rd verse of the 7th chapter. And there's a conversation that goes on between these four men. And they said, now, why sit we here until we die? If we say we will enter into the city, then the famine is in the city, and we shall die there. There's no food there, so we'll die. And then they said, if we just sit still here, we will also die because we don't have any food here. Then they said, let's go then. And just give ourselves up to the host of the Syrians. Let's just fall on their mercy. And if they let us live, then we shall live. But if they kill us, then we shall but die. And so they were saying that there's only one chance that we might live, and that's if somehow the Syrians have mercy on us. Because if we stay here, we're going to die. If we go inside the city, we're going to die. And so they say, let us go. And they went. And we are told now that they rose up in the twilight, in verse 5, to go into the group of the Syrians. And when they were come to the uttermost part of the camp of Syria, behold, there was no man there. And so it seems that God had caused the Syrians to hear great noise of chariots and horses prancing and beating upon the earth, the noise of a great host coming. And they said one to another, lo, the king of Israel hath hired against us the king of the Hittites and the Egyptians, and they're coming upon us. They became frightened, and they arose and fled in the twilight, and they left behind their tents, their horses, all of their animals. They left their clothing. They left all the food and just simply fled for their lives. And as the lepers approached the camp, they heard no noise. All but the horses just standing there. There was no men around. All the people were gone. And they looked in one tent, and lo, there was all of this food and drink. As if they were eating, and all of a sudden they just left the table. And so they went in, and they began to eat and to drink. And then when they were filling up, they saw that there was silver and gold and fine raiment. And so they gathered up some of this and carried it outside and hid it. Then they went into another tent, and it was the same thing. There was plenty of good food to eat. They found good raiment and silver and gold. And so after they had eaten their fill, one of them says, you know, this day is a day of good tidings, and we hold our peace. You know, this is a good statement here that maybe sometimes we don't pay much attention to, because he says, if we tarry here till morning light, some mischief will come upon us. Now, therefore come that we may go and tell the king's household. They knew that if they stayed there, that things were not going to work out so well. They were having it good right then. But they believed that if they just stayed there and continued to gorge themselves on this food and to gather up and to hoard all of this precious jewels and silver, that something terrible was going to happen. Somehow they were going to lose it. They were going to lose their lives. And that it wasn't right for them to be so selfish and to keep all of this for themselves. And so then, they went and they told the people of Samaria. And they rushed out. And in a matter of hours, the famine, the starvation, had changed into a feast. I want you to notice the three categories that we find here, and I think we still find them today. And you know, even back here in the Old Testament, this message is so much alive today, because I think it speaks to different people in our 20th century church. We find these same kinds of Christians. First of all, there are those that I would call sitters. And they would be representative of these four leprous men who just sat there at the gate. Inside the city was famine. And they represent really the vast majority of people within the church. That while the church and the world is under fierce attack of Satan's army, so many Christians are just sitting. They're sitting in a class. They go every Sunday. They sit in the same Sunday school class. They attend a conference. Or they go and sit in a committee. Or they just come and sit in a comfortable pew. And while the world is going to pieces, they just sit there. And they really do nothing, nor do they say anything. Now, the sitter is an interesting person. Probably sometime in the past, God's Spirit spoke to his heart. And while the choir was singing and the congregation was singing the invitation hymn, that person came forward and told the pastor, I want to be a Christian. I want to follow Jesus. And then the pastor nodded toward the front pew, and he says, be seated. And the tragedy is the person probably mistook this for the Great Commission. And our church is filled with sitters. And every average church is filled with a lot of sitters. And they're experts on why anything cannot be done. Sitters are the first category of Christians. Some of those are people who have not grown very far in their Christian life. They just sit. They never venture out. They never do anything. They never participate. And they never grow much in the Word. be like the man that came to the preacher and he says, "Pastor," he says, "I know it's in the Bible, but where in the scripture does it say that every tub has to sit on its own bottom?" And probably there are a lot who would still believe like that. You know, there are three kinds of people along this line. First of all, there are those who just sit and watch things happen. Then there's a group who make things happen. And then you have the group who don't know what's happening. Which group are you in tonight? Do you just simply sit back and watch things happen in your church and really you're not involved? Or are you a part of the moving force within your church? And you make it your business to share in the responsibility, and you have a part in what your church is doing, and you help your church to make things happen as it reaches out and accomplishes and reaches people and ministers them to people. You have a part in it. Are you one who really just stays in the dark all the time and you just don't know what's happening? Now, I told the Sunday school group tonight that we wanted you to be informed about the church and everything involved so that you would be able to give answer to questions and so forth. And we need to know. You need to know. But do you know the hardest person to deal with today? Listen closely now. It's the person who doesn't know, and they don't know that they don't know. Did you get that straight? It's the person who doesn't know, and they don't know that they don't know. They are ignorant about a lot of facts, but they don't know it. And these are the hardest people to deal with. There's a second group that we will call the getters. Now, you can't be too critical of the getter. He's simply a sitter who has been overcome by common sense. Why sit we here until we die? The getter is a Christian who has decided that there must be more to the Christian life than what he is experiencing. And he is out to get it. And you look at these lepers making their way from the city of poverty to the camp of plenty. And to their surprise, God has already provided their deliverance. And they went from tent to tent just getting. And the danger is of remaining just a getter. Could it be that some of us here simply go from one tent to another, drinking, eating, just getting? Getting more Bible knowledge, learning more about the deeper life in Christ, and yet just getting. And they stay in that circle. I've known some people who go to every Bible conference that comes to town. They have to go to Bible classes different times of the week, and they just keep going. They just keep going and getting, but it doesn't really change their lives. It doesn't do anything for them. It doesn't make them a better person, a better worker, a more effective worker. They are getting, but somehow it's not coming out and being used as it should. They don't witness in the flesh. In fact, just to be on the safe side, they don't witness at all. They just run from one tent to another getting. Now, remember when you study the life of Jesus that the more deeply Christ drank of his spiritual cup, the more extensive his ministry grew. And when we look at Simon Peter in their upper room, he is the same man, but a changed man on the day of Pentecost. And then Paul used of God to write volumes about the spirit-controlled life. Also reached two-thirds of the then-known world with the gospel within 10 years. A getter is better than a sitter. But there is a more important person. probably a far smaller group of Christians that you see now is these that we call the goers and tellers. And you see this group for the most part at the 5 o'clock visitation. It shrinks up. And the services shrink up during the day as the different people are weaned out. But this third kind of a Christian, the goer and teller, is one who probably said, "We do not well. This is a day of good tidings. We have something great, men." He says, "And we hold our peace." Can't you imagine that leper? Probably some of his fingers and other parts of his body was all splotched and missing. But he said, "Look, we have all of this food and all of this raiment, and just a short way away and inside the walls of Samaria, there the mothers and the fathers and the children are dying, and children are being boiled in a pot, and they're eating animals there, and here we are literally gorging ourselves." Oh, he said, "Let's go and tell the king's household." And they did. And the people were saved. What a beautiful picture of God's deliverance for Samaria, which of course was an established fact. But its citizens were really totally ignorant of it. And while these four lepers were there gorging themselves on fine food and wine and warm clothes, the people in Samaria knew nothing about it. We do not well. What an understatement. And so I think that here's where we need to see our really objective. Dear friends, do you realize there are a lot of people in Virginia Beach, in a city where there are so many TV sets, the folks have one in every room, and the programs and the churches and all of this, but do you know there are literally thousands of people who still don't know the good news? They still don't know. They are just like the people of Samaria. And as far as Christianity is concerned, they're in a walled city, just living a life of righteous living. And tonight you can drive in either direction from this church, and within a mile you'll come across a lot of rowdy, righteous places. Whether you go in this direction, or back in this direction, you will find the saloons and people there trying to find peace and understanding and happiness in the bottom of a bottle. And I've never seen a person find it yet. They've never found it. Other young people down at one of the lounges there thinking that all of the glitter and the loud music and the swinging and the swaying, that this is the answer. And then they find later on, this is not the answer with the devil's crowd and the devil's group that operate these places. And this is why we need to come to grips with our task and our responsibility. We have the message of peace. You and I feast on it every day. We've found the inward peace and enjoyment of being a Christian. Now, my friend, are we just going to be a sitter and a getter and just get all we can? Or will we fall in line with this third group? We want to go and tell the household. And there are people all around who need to hear this gospel story of Jesus Christ. We need to tell the good news. Don't keep it for yourself. Don't hoard it up. I've made this statement before, but the only way to really love is to give it away.
Did you know that? Listen to me. Your love is not worth a plug nickel if you don't give it away. It's no good. What good is a mother's love to the child if she never cuddles that baby and to her bosom and soothes and hums and pats that little baby and feeds and watches over that and protects that baby and lets that baby know that that baby can put confidence in that person, that she's not going to hurt that child, but that's her protector and the one who's going to feed, or the father doing the same thing. It has to be shown. And some children today are starving for affection because somehow the parent never gave the love away. What good would a husband's love or a wife's love be if you never showed any emotion or affection, but you just come in day in and day out and barely speak to one another, and everything's on a business transaction, and the home is not really a home, it's just sort of a filling station and a rest camp where you come and you fill up and you rest and you get up and you go the next day and you just do the same thing over and over. That's not much of a marriage. And not much love being shown. You need to love each other. You need to express your love, and you need to actually whisper in the other one's ear, "I love you." It may shock some of them, but why don't you try it tonight? It may change the whole picture in your home. We have to do this. And as a Christian, if we say, "Lost person, I love you," that's easy. Do you know that's the easiest thing you can do? And the next easiest thing you can do is get on your knees and pray about it. Now, don't underestimate prayer, but that's the next easiest thing you can do, because you haven't gone anywhere yet. You haven't gotten out of your room yet. "I love you, lost person. I'm going to pray for you. I'm going to talk to God about you." But if you really love, then you're going to go and you're going to sit down and say, "I love you so much, I want to tell you what Jesus means to me and what he can do for you." You make contact. This is loving. And this is what we want to do. And this is the kind of church we want. And this is the kind of church workers we want. We want to be busy going and telling and sharing the good news, because this is what God has called us to do. Not just sit down and let somebody spoon feed us all the time and get all we can. It's time that we give to others. We need to tell others. A very shy man was going on a special job to the land of India. He had been courting this girl for some time, and he had asked her to marry him. But he just couldn't stand the thought of a refusal. He didn't know what her answer would be, because he says, "I'm going to this strange land. I'll have a good job there, good money. I want you to go as my wife. Write me a letter and tell me if you will go and if you will become my wife." He says, "If your answer is no, then just don't answer. But if it's yes, write and let me know, and then I will take you to India as my bride." She sat down and she wrote out her letter of acceptance. When she finished her letter to this young man, saying that she loved him, she wanted to marry him, it was pouring down rain and she couldn't go out to the mailbox. Her little brother was going out, and he had his old coat on. And she asked him to mail that letter. Had the address, the stamp, everything was fixed. All he had to do was put it in the post office. He said, "Oh, I'll be glad to." And so he stuffed it down in his coat, and he went out. Years later, this girl had waited. She never saw or heard from her lover. He never came for her. She heard about his marriage years later. Later on, the family was going to move to another home. They began to pack up the clothes. And there was her brother's old coat that had gotten thrown back in the rag bag. And she felt something in the pocket and crumpled down in the pocket, all yellow now from age, was a letter she had written telling this man about her love. And he had never received it. It was never put in the post office. And because of that, by his neglect, he wrecked his sister's happiness. By simple neglect. My dear friend, you and I have a love letter to deliver. We have God's love letter to deliver to people. Let's don't disappoint them. And let's don't disappoint God. Some of the last words Jesus said, I want you to go and tell this good news. That's where you and I come in as God's children. Don't just sit by. Don't just get all you can. But we need to go and we need to tell. You and I have one of the sweetest, most beautiful, loving love letters in the world to share with us. Let's tell it. Let's share. Would you stand?